13th day of June. We don't care that it's Friday the 13th. All we care about is that it's Friday, and we welcome you into the 9 to 10 hour. This is American DA Live. Commonwealth Attorney Ray Larson is with us and brought to you by Landscaper's Corner at 1305 Old Frankfort Pike. Landscaper's Corner has Triple Crown Elite Grass Seed, the seed everybody is talking about, available in 5, 25, and 50-pound bags. Call 225-9433. Good morning, Ray.
Good morning, Jack.
How are you, sir?
Fine.
Good. Good. We have a guest who is a return guest. He's one of our all-stars in our stable of Commonwealth Attorney Stars.
Yes.
This program this morning.
Yeah, Rob Sanders is the Commonwealth Attorney in Kenton County, which is right across the river from Cincinnati, and or as they say, Cincinnati.
And, yeah, they don't say it right up there.
No.
Yeah.
And he's been the Commonwealth Attorney for several years and has prosecuted, runs an excellent office up there, and has prosecuted a number of high-profile cases, and always interesting cases. And the one we're here to talk about today was some fool who, some defendant.
Right, yeah.
Who was involved in some kind of a poker game, apparently wasn't having any luck, but wanted to take money home with him. So, Rob, welcome.
Thanks, Ray, and thanks, Jack, for having me back on. It's always a pleasure.
It's always fun to have you here, Rob, because you tell a good story, and obviously you're a damn good prosecutor. Start us out here and tell us about this Pharaoh Wilson character.
Well, this case goes all the way back to September 28th, 2012. Covington police were called at about 3, 4 o'clock in the morning to a reported robbery of a poker game in the City Heights housing complex here in Covington, which is right in the heart of Kenton County, Kentucky. City Heights housing complex kind of sits up on a hill, is an old World War II era barracks-style apartment complex that has got one way in and one way out. It's sort of surrounded by a very rugged hillside terrain that's covered in woods and got nothing but trails running through it. So it's kind of isolated up on top of this hill, and Covington police are called up there to this complex for a robbery of a poker game. And this is, I think, on a Thursday night. It's in the middle of the week. Most people are asleep in bed, but there were apparently some folks up there that were playing a high-stakes game of poker. Mr. Wilson didn't like his hand and decided he'd probably take a lot more money from the poker game if he just robbed it. So he pulls out a gun, grabs money off the table, and makes off with his money and everybody else's money that was in the pot and money from a few more of the players that were there at the game. So that's how it all gets started, and Covington police respond up there, a number of officers that time of night. Wasn't a whole lot else going on. They get up there. The poker players all knew Pharaoh Wilson because they played poker with him all the time. So they say, you know, Pharaoh Wilson robbed us. This is what he's wearing. He's got a gun. You might find him at this apartment because that's where his girlfriend lives. Or if he's not there, he'll be at his girlfriend's mom's over at this other apartment on Todd Court. So they go to the girlfriend's apartment first. They find her, but he's not there with her. So they go to the girlfriend's mother's apartment, which is a second floor apartment above a laundromat in the same housing project. Now, as they're approaching, half the officers go to the front and half the officers go to the back. And two officers that went to the back were a canine officer named Mark Richardson and then another patrol officer named Mike Gilliland. And they're covering the back in case anybody comes out, but there's not a back door to this apartment. It's on the second floor, and there is only a rear window. So the other officers go to the front, and they find it locked, and they start banging on the door. About this time that they're banging on the front door trying to get somebody to answer, the two officers in the rear see a guy climbing out the rear window of the apartment wearing the same clothing that their victims had given him a description of.
And this is second floor, you said?
Yeah, he's climbing out the second floor window, and he's getting ready to presumably jump down and take off out the back into the woods. And so the officers they're standing there, two officers and a canine, and they're thinking, well, if we can just get him down on the ground, we'll have the upper hand. But as he turns to look to where he's jumping, he sees these two officers. Well, once they're spotted, they start yelling at him to, you know, drop down here, you're under arrest, stop police, all that kind of stuff. And instead of following the officer's commands, he climbs back in the window. Now, the canine officer, Officer Richardson, had actually arrested Pharaoh Wilson before, and so when he looked down and made eye contact, Officer Richardson recognized him not only to meet the description of the suspect, but, hey, I remember that guy. That's Farrow Wilson. And that's who they knew they were after by name. So he climbs back in the window, and then next thing you know, when he reappears in the window, he yells a few expletives at the officers and opens fire.
Gee.
Yeah, just out with very little warning, just a few expletives, and bam, 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 he just starts firing his gun. When the officers had started yelling, a third officer, Sergeant Kevin Brady, had come from the front of the residence, around the side to the back of the residence, and he got back there just about the time that Mr. Wilson started opening fire. Well, he started firing, you know, downward from an upper, from a second-story window, had an upper hand on him because of the angle he was firing from, and he started in a sweeping motion shooting from one officer across this, what is in essence a backyard, towards the two other officers. Officer Richardson returned fire immediately and ran for cover because he was standing out in the middle of this backyard with no cover, so he ran up to the building to try and make it more difficult for Mr. Wilson to shoot him and took cover underneath a little overhang that was over a back door of a different apartment. And an officer Gilliland and Sergeant Brady, they also sprinted for the cover of the building as well because there wasn't anything in this backyard to hide behind. So after this first round of fire, and Officer Gilliland and Sergeant Brady had both fired back at Mr. Wilson as well. They shot the heck out of this window but didn't hit Mr. Wilson. Most of their bullets had gone through the window and into the ceiling of the apartment because of the way they were shooting, the angle they were shooting. And then there was a short pause in the firing. Next thing you know, Mr. Wilson appears in the window again and just opens fire again. Only this time, his first shot strikes Officer Richardson in the foot. And Officer Richardson, because of this overhang, actually never returned fire because he didn't have a clear shot at the window. But he knew he was shot in the foot right away. The other two officers, Gilliland and Brady, both returned fire. And there was this other shootout, basically exchange or volley of gunfire that stopped. Officer Richardson started radioing to everyone else that he had been hit, and they told him, okay, we need to get you out of here and get you to an ambulance. So very bravely, Gilliland and Brady stepped back out away from the wall to cover the window, make sure that Richardson could get out safely. About the time all this is going on, Mr. Wilson sprints out the front door of the residence and going in the opposite direction. So obviously all the officers' attention was trained on the back of the building by now, and here he comes running out the front door. Well, when he did, he still had a gun in his hand, and another officer, Lieutenant Brian Steffen, sees him running, sees him raise the gun towards Sergeant Steffen, and Sergeant Steffen returns fire as well. Thought he might have hit Mr. Wilson. Unfortunately, as it would turn out, he didn't. But Mr. Wilson made it into the woods, and the officers gave pursuit to the wood line. But then they had to stop once they got to the woods because it was too dark. They couldn't see where they were going. They couldn't see where Mr. Wilson was, and it just wasn't safe. A manhunt ensued. Every officer in probably two counties. I was eventually called to the scene when I got there. There were officers from Campbell County milling around on guard duty up in this housing complex, and I pull up on the scene. The first thing I see is light blue shirts, and I know there's no police departments that wear light blue shirts in Kenton County, but there are next door in Campbell County. I thought, oh, this can't be good. We've got officers from all the way over in Campbell County here in Kenton helping look for this suspect. This is going to be really bad. So that's where the investigation basically starts. Covington Police Detective Brian Fuller was the senior detective at the scene. He was assigned as lead investigator, but every detective Covington has was called out. For that matter, I think they called in almost every cop they have to both cover the street for calls and to participate in this investigation. Fast forward several hours later, Mr. Wilson was eventually found holed up in a seedy hotel over on the west side of Cincinnati by the Hamilton County, Ohio Fugitive Task Force that had been given a heads up by Covington officers that Mr. Wilson might be headed over that way because he had some known associates on that side of the river. And sure enough, when they started checking some likely places where somebody that's broken the law might go hide out, they found Mr. Wilson in one of the hotels over there.
All right. Well, we don't need you today, Ray, and we don't need me today because this guy's so good at what he does. That's a great synopsis of the whole case. When we come back, And I appreciate that. That's a wonderful description there, Rob. When we come back, we usually do this first. Because of the complexities of all the different small towns up there and police departments, we'll get you to explain to us exactly all the area that you cover and the surrounding areas and how that complicates things. We're going to take a break. 253-5959, touch star 590 from AT&T, toll free from anywhere. This is American DA Live. Commonwealth Attorney Ray Larson in the studio with us, and we've got Commonwealth's Attorney from Kenton County, Rob Sanders, is our guest this morning. And boy, I tell you what, Rob, that was a great story and nicely done. This guy obviously is a genius.
As you said, Pharaoh?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a Darwin Award nominee from the Commonwealth Attorneys Association.
Rob and his friends and everybody knows him and knows where he lives and where his girlfriend lives and where his girlfriend mother lives and all that stuff. Now, at the beginning of the show, normally, Ray, you ask our guests about their jurisdiction. We kind of waited till we had an opportunity for Rob to set this up for us. Now go to your line of questioning.
Right. One of the things we normally, when we talk about a case, it isn't done so quickly and concisely, and so the program is just about over,
right,
unless we
right.
start what we call filling.
The big fill.
Yeah. Rob, so first of all, I want to know about this card game. You said it was a high-stakes game, and what these guys was it an illegal card game? Like somebody that was holding it was profiting from the game?
Well, that was somewhat debated during the case. Of course, the lady that was hosting the card game denied that she was getting any cut of the pots or that anybody was paying to play. But all the other players said that she took a cut of the pot. So there certainly was at least the allegation that it was an illegal card game. It was high. I guess high stakes is all relative on how big of a gambler you are. For me, anything more than quarters is high stakes. But I think even for the average poker player, this was probably a game where the pots got up into the hundreds and maybe into the thousands of dollars per game. So I'd certainly consider that a high-stakes poker game.
You know,
I think if you're holding it in a housing project, most folks up there would consider it a high-stakes poker.
You know how much money he got away with when he robbed them?
No, I don't. The cash from the poker game was never recovered because, as I mentioned, Mr. Wilson got away initially. So the cash wasn't recovered. He didn't have what I suspect he got away with. He did not have on him when he was arrested.
My guess is everybody else that was involved with the game who were robbed probably had a pretty good idea how much he took.
Oh, yeah. We had, I guess the witnesses said that there was probably about $600 or $800 in the pot at the time. And plus he didn't take everybody's money because some of the people were his friends in that game, and the lady that was hosting the game had known him since he was born. He only took a couple of the players' money, the couple of players that he wasn't as familiar with. He took the pot, he took the money that he should have lost back, and he took the money off the players that he really didn't know that well.
Now, and if he would have just jumped out that second floor window, head first, landed on his head, he would have been okay.
Because I could find a way to break my toe and get an infection and die just stubbing it or something. But guys like Pharaoh Wilson, you can't kill them. They'll live through anything.
Tell us about your jurisdiction.
Well, Kenton County is mostly thought of as an urban county. However, it's really very diverse. When you get in the northern end of Kenton County, my office, for instance, is in Covington, which is our biggest city in the county, which is one of the biggest cities in Kentucky. It's got a population of about 45,000 people. It's right across the river from downtown Cincinnati. I can look out my office window and see both Great American Ballpark and Paul Brown Stadium. We're probably closer walking distance to both those sports teams than most folks in Cincinnati are. So downtown is very much urban, has all the same urban problems of a big city, because even though we are a decent-sized city, we're by no means a big city, but Cincinnati is. So we get all the same problems that Cincinnati has because we are, in essence, in the north end of the county, part of downtown Cincinnati. However, it gets very suburban very fast once you get south of Covington into cities like Fort Wright and Park Hills and Fort Mitchell, Crestview Hills, Edgewood, Lakeside Park, places like that. And then you get a little further south past I-275, you get to another good-sized city like Erlanger and another one, Independence, that are very... They have some business, but they're mostly residential. And then after you get past Independence, it gets very rural very fast. And you'll see very undeveloped portions of the county, especially down along the Licking River. And the Licking River separates Kenton County from Campbell County, which has Newport as its biggest city. They're right next door to us. And, of course, we have Boone County on the other side, which has Florence and several other more rural spots. But so we get going from urban to rural very fast with a whole lot of suburb right in the middle.
You know, I remember, I'm old enough to remember when the deal was reversed. Downtown Cincinnati was a beautiful place to go. We used to go up there when I was a kid, Christmas shopping, and a vibrant city, and everything across in Kentucky was kind of rough, and especially like Newport and to some degree Covington. You guys have kind of switched places now, haven't you?
Yes, sir. In the last couple decades, it's definitely done an about face. Covington and Newport are, for all intents and purposes, very nice places.
Yeah.
There's lots of good hotels, lots of good restaurants, nice places to stay. We still have our fair share of issues from time to time. But Cincinnati, on the other hand, had lagged way behind. Now, Cincinnati's starting to rebound. They've got a project downtown right across the bridge from us called The Banks that is residential, mixed-use residential and entertainment district wedged in between the Bengals and the Red stadiums. And then they've got over the Rhine, which has historically been the worst part of Cincinnati, is now rebounding, and they've got a lot of gentrification of that very, very old part of town with lots of fantastic new restaurants and bars and entertainment venues. So they're making a comeback as well, and hopefully that'll help Covington and Newport with the strides they've been making in the past few years.
All right, we're going to take a break, and well, this is a short one, and we'll be right back. And if you have a question or comment, 253-5959, touch star 590 from AT&T.
WBLK.
We are back. Commonwealth Attorney Ray Larson in the studio. Commonwealth Attorney from Kenton County, Rob Sanders, is on the phone with us. Ray?
Before we get into the case, I want to ask, how many cities are in Kenton County and police departments?
Oh, goodness. Cities. Not all the cities have their own police department, although it seems like it, but they don't. We've probably got about 20 different cities in Kenton County and about 12 different police departments. Now, that's just municipal police departments. That doesn't include the state police or probation and parole or fish and wildlife and all these other departments with arrest powers that every county deals with and works with. That's just municipal police departments.
And the other question that we're all dealing with, and that Northern Kentucky seems to have been hit harder than a lot, is this whole heroin issue and overdose deaths from heroin and other drugs. Tell us what's happening in Northern Kentucky on that, Rob.
Well, Covington's nickname has been Gateway to the South for a number of years, and unfortunately when it comes to this heroin problem, we have been Gateway to the South as well, or at least Gateway to Kentucky. We've seen heroin for probably 4 or 5 years now really make a comeback. We were out in front of places like Lexington and Louisville and all the other cities and parts of Kentucky that are starting to see heroin and have a bad heroin problem. We're probably having 3-4 overdoses, and not necessarily fatal overdoses, but overdoses that are being treated in emergency rooms here in Kenton County on a daily basis. We're having several overdose deaths a week, probably getting close to averaging one a day. It's just running rampant. And I don't know that to say ours is worse is, I think, a matter of timing only. It's only worse because we're out in front of everybody else. But it's going to get just as bad in Lexington and every other part of Kentucky if we don't start doing something really, really serious about it and taking this heroin epidemic just like it's the plague and trying to fix it. And so far I've been very unimpressed with the amount of effort I've seen come out of Frankfort to try and help combat the problem. But folks, I think up in these parts, Boone, Kenton, and Campbell counties especially, are just about at wit's end with heroin because there's no easy answer to it. It's got to be a multi-pronged approach, not just law enforcement, not just treatment, but education and prevention, because I don't think that you can incarcerate your way out of this, although I certainly think drug dealers deserve lengthy incarceration. But I don't think you can treat your way out of this. I don't think either both of those options or both of those avenues are after the fact, after somebody has already gotten addicted to heroin or after someone has already been selling heroin. What we need to do is get out in front of this, cut it off at the borders so it's not coming in anymore on the federal level, and then try and come up with some effective prevention on the state level. But as with just about everything, the first thing we need in order to do that is resources, and that's one thing we don't have in Kentucky.
What about this introduction of something called Narcan? Tell us about that.
Well, Narcan, or Naloxone, I believe is the generic form of Narcan, is a drug that almost instantaneously reverses the effects of heroin by blocking the receptors in the brain that process the drug, the opiate, that gives the user the sense of high. So not only does it, in essence, bring them back, reverse the depressant effects of heroin, and it's taken personally, I've even seen it when I've been out doing ride-alongs with police, where somebody that you'd swear up and down was dead as a doornail, and the paramedics show up and they give them a shot of Narcan, and it reverses the heroin, and the person's waking up, almost like you see on TV every time some emergency responder does CPR and the person magically not only survives, but they wake right up and sit up and start talking. Well, that's what this Narcan stuff actually does. It can be a very good thing, obviously. It can save lives, but at the same token, it doesn't do any good to save somebody with Narcan if there's not someone there to intervene medically and on the law enforcement end. You can't just keep overdosing and keep hoping that Narcan is going to bring you back. Someone's got to intervene and force the person that is using into treatment, even if that means incarcerating the person until they get some treatment.
Let's go to the calls. Jim, good morning. You're on the air.
Yeah, this is for almost all crimes what I'm talking about here. You know, when money and property is seized by the police, why can't we use that money for better reward system to catch more criminals instead of just keeping it to themselves? You know, we should be able to have a big reward system.
All right. You can listen to the answer off the air. How does that work?
Well, I'm gonna talk a little bit about asset forfeiture, which is what Jim's talking about. If the police seize $1,000 from a drug dealer who is convicted of trafficking, then the court, we request the court forfeit that $1,000. 85% of that $1,000 or $850 will go to the police, law enforcement, police department. 15% of that goes to the prosecutor who prosecuted the case's office. Now, we do that, and one of the great uses of asset forfeiture dollars for us, as Rob Sanders says, we don't have the resources to do a lot of things. At the 1st of July, a new budget, state budget for Commonwealth attorneys begins. By October the 1st, almost all Commonwealth attorneys are out of money for supplies to keep our offices running. We use asset forfeiture dollars for that.
Really?
If we need a new computer, then we have to use asset forfeiture dollars to do that. I mean, it's basically, and we don't, it comes from dope dealers. And you know, Rob, we don't thank the dope dealers enough.
That's true, Rick. And I want to take this off. Office without dope dealers. Jack, to give you an idea of what Gray's talking about, last year and for the past couple of years, and our budget's been cut so much that they cut file folders out of our budget. Now, tell me how you're supposed to run a law office, in my case, with 10 full-time prosecutors, full-time attorneys, and Ray, I know, has more prosecutors than I do down there, and it's the same way for Ray, it's the same way for every Commonwealth attorney across the state. How are you supposed to run a law office without file folders?
Wow. That's...
We're having to buy that with forfeiture dollars. First of all, only drug dealing cases really are the ones that we're getting any forfeiture dollars from. Cases like Farrah Wilson's, if we actually recovered that money that was taken, taken from a robbery victim, that goes back to the robbery victim. It doesn't go to police or prosecutors. We're only talking about the profits from drug dealing when we do get any dollars at all. But the bottom line is Kentucky is shortchanging law enforcement and prosecutors so bad, there's very little money left over to go to things that should be worthy causes for expenditure of that money, like reward money.
All right, we're going to take our final break, and then when we come back, we'll actually get back to the case that we're supposed to be talking about. 253-5959, touch star 590. Well, you know, Rob can summarize the whole trial in 3.5 minutes, so we're not worried about
it. Then we'll get back to other stuff.
We'll be right back. We've only got 3 minutes left, but I have great confidence that Kenton County Commonwealth Attorney Rob Sanders can tell us the entire trial of this joker in 3 minutes. Rob, take it.
Well, Jack, the trial lasted about 2 weeks, little less than 2 weeks. The defense was basically that Farrah Wilson did not shoot the police officers, that the police officers shot the building, and the ricochets were what hit the other officers. In other words, the defense was that the officers shot themselves. Jury didn't buy that, despite some defense experts from... or the defense hired some experts that came in, and they were so bad that the court wouldn't even let a lot of what they wanted to say in. But nevertheless, jury didn't buy it. They sentenced him to 15 years on each count of attempted murder of a police officer. They ran those consecutive for 45 years. Then they found out that Mr. Wilson was a persistent felony offender in the second degree because he had a prior conviction for drug trafficking here in Kenton County. They enhanced those 15 years then to 20-year sentences and also ran those consecutively for a total of 60 years in prison. That didn't totally resolve the case because we still had one charge of possession of a handgun by convicted felon, which Ray will tell you that in Kentucky you can't try that with other cases because it's the only time you get to tell the jury that the defendant is a convicted felon before he's actually convicted. We had a separate trial the first week of May on just that charge alone. The jury convicted him and very quickly gave him the maximum sentence of 10 years. He was sentenced next day by Judge Patricia Summey, one of our circuit court judges. She ran those sentences consecutively and sentenced Mr. Wilson to a total of 70 years in prison.
You just did that in 1 minute. We got 2 minutes left, so.
Yeah.
I know, Ray. He's always got something to talk about. So.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's great. Now, I know what the guy at Kroger's is going to ask you tomorrow, Ray. Is it the produce man that
nabbed you
every Saturday?
Yep.
He's going to ask you tomorrow what happened to the police officer that was shot.
Yep.
Well, the police officer was out of work. This happened the end of September in 2012. He returned to duty in February 2013. He's still going to have long-term problems with his foot. He had several problems already during the time off with infection and cleaning the gunshot wound didn't go perfectly, and he had to have what they call debridement, where they in essence cut away the dead skin. It's really quite alarming what a bullet does when it passes through your body. It actually burns the flesh on the inside of your body as it passes through because the bullet's so hot. So the skin continues to die off and die off, and they to cut it away. So he went through some very painful medical treatment. Fortunately, he did return to work in February of 2013. He's still back out on the street. He's still working as a canine officer. Hopefully, he is going to have a long career. But the unfortunate part of this is he does have some problems with balance and strength in that foot where he was shot. So we don't know ultimately whether this wound will shorten his career. But for now, he's back to work and doing a fine job.
That's cool that you kept up with him. That's nice.
Oh, yeah. He's somebody that we work with on a raid. He's one of the two Covington police officer canine units. So he's somebody that we deal with quite a bit because he's very good at making drug arrests.
Thank Rob for us there, Ray.
Thanks, Rob. You're the best.
Hey, thanks, Jack. Thanks, Ray.
Thank you very much. Stand by. We have an update from ABC coming up. If you're listening to WVLK AM, stay with us for Live with Lee. If you're listening to 101.5 FM, the Coach's Show with Joe B. and Denny, have a great weekend. Happy Father's Day, Ray. I'll be back.